Okay, Kevin, for the grand prize of $1 million, what color is the White House?
I know this.
5 seconds.
Oh, switching to Geico could save you a bunch of money on car insurance?
Okay, judges. That's true, Kevin. They'll allow it. Congratulations. You're a winner.
Woo!
Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always the great answer.
Hello and welcome to this edition of Back Nine Report. Normally, my co-host Carlos Torres opens the show, but Carlos is otherwise engaged this week and couldn't join us. So our good friend, Mike May, has graciously offered to fill in for Carlos this week. Mike, welcome to the Back Nine Report.
Fred, it is a pleasure and an honor to be on the air with you. It's great to be back in the States. I had 18 days in England last month, and I know we'll talk about it later, but let's get on the show, and we'll save the highlights for later.
Yeah, Mike just returned from a bucket list golf trip to the southwest of England, and we're going to find out more about that a little bit later. But first, this week in golf, John Rahm made a statement with a six-stroke victory in Ireland. Xander Schauffele became yet another under 25 first-time winner on the PGA Tour, and the first-ever major on the Legends Tour began yesterday. The Senior LPGA Championship got underway on Monday at French Lick. We've got a ton of golf to talk about tonight with Mike May, so let's get right to it. As always, we begin our show with a recap of last week's action around the various World Golf Tours in our backspin section. Mike, we're going to give you the first shot tonight since you're the guest. Tell us what happened at the Greenbrier Classic.
All right, sir. On the PGA Tour this weekend, as you mentioned, the pros gathered in the wild and wonderful state of West Virginia. History was made as yet another under 25-year-old won on the PGA Tour. This past weekend, 23-year-old Xander Schauffele, in just his 23rd start on the tour, used a strong finish at the U.S. Open at Erin Hills, where he tied for fifth, to gain the necessary confidence to excel at the Old White TPC course at the Greenbrier. Schauffele birdied the final hole of the tournament to get his inaugural win on the PGA Tour when his tee shot at the par 3 18th finished at 3 feet from the pin. Schauffele then rolled in the putt to finish at 14 under par. While later, Robert Streb had a chance to tie Schauffele if he could have hold the greenside chip for birdie in the 18th, but it came up short. So game, set, and match in the title to Xander Schauffele. The leader of the tournament, though, for the first 3 days was Sebastian Munoz from Colombia, hoping to become the second-ever Colombian to win on the PGA Tour. The top 27 in the tournament by Sunday night, Munoz was the only player who did not break par on Sunday. He recorded a two-over par round of 72 to finish at 12 under par, two shots off Schauffele's winning total of 14 under par. Another big story last week during the first three rounds was 53-year-old Davis Love III, our most recent Ryder Cup captain, who shot a 7 under par round of 63 in Thursday's opening round. That got my attention. Davis continued to be a factor through the first three rounds. He faded with a 5 over par round of 75 on Sunday to finish in a tie for 29th at 5 under par. Had Love won the event, he would have set a record, the oldest winner of a PGA Tour event at the age of 53. He would have broken the record currently held by the late, great Sam Snead, who, ironically, used to be based at the Greenbrier many, many years ago. What's interesting about the Greenbrier Classic is that I don't think that there is a sports event in the country that has a stronger connection to its state than the Greenbrier Classic has with the state of West Virginia. This tournament is truly a big deal for those who live in the Mountaineer State. And you can sense that pride, especially when they interviewed current West Virginia Governor Jim Justice, who also owns the Greenbrier. The entire Greenbrier complex looks great after the flooding that destroyed the course last year and canceled the entire event. Can't remember the last time a PGA Tour event was canceled. But CBS did a wonderful job of recognizing and honoring the local volunteers who stepped up to lend a helping hand to anybody that needed it at that time. That was a year ago. And two of the local volunteers who lent a helping hand and a few $100,000 to the relief effort were two-time Masters champion Bubba Watson and his wife Angie, who live in the area. But back to the golf, there were exemptions into the Open Championship that were online at the Greenbrier. Who punched their ticket to the Open Championship? Well, it was the top four finishers of the Greenbrier Classic, and they are now in the field at the Open Championship being contested next week. at Royal Birkdale, which is located in the northwest of England. Those top players at the Greenbrier who are headed to Birkdale are Shoffley, Robert Streb, Jamie Lovemark, and Sebastian Munoz. So we wish them well on their trip overseas, and it'll be interesting to see if Mr. Shoffley can continue his winning ways and maybe become another first-time major winner like Brooks Koepka was at Erin Hills. Thank you, Fred.
Yeah, Shoffley, you know, really competed against Koepka actually a little bit there at Erin Hills. I think that's where he gained his confidence to kind of break through and win on tour. He kind of realized he could compete with these guys so out there in Wisconsin. So good for him. Hey, Mike, the Irish Open was held at Port Stewart last weekend, and John Rahm definitely made a statement with the win there. 1 year ago, just 1 year ago right now, he was over 500th in the world. Now, he's in the top 10 at number 8. He started the final round tied with American Daniel M at 14 under par, but when M bogeyed 2 and 3, Rahm holed out from the fairway for eagle at the 4th. Voila, a 4-shot swing. Rahm would go on to add another eagle at the par 5, 14, and cruise to a 6-shot win. He clearly drew a get-out-of-jail-free card when European Tour rules officials did not assess a 2-shot penalty for mismarking his ball on the 6th green. After marking it to the side to avoid Daniel M's line and then moving it over one club length, he failed to replace it the same way. It was clearly more so than Lexi Thompson's at the A&E Inspiration when she received a 4-shot penalty and cost her the championship. I do applaud the European Tour for letting play go on and notifying Rahm as soon as possible and talking with Ian Daniel M about the situation, but he should have received a penalty. Loved viewing the Irish Open this week in Port Stewart. What a beautiful golf course with holes framed by the large, steep sand dunes. It's, of course, just down the road of just 5 miles to Royal Port Rush that will host the 2019 Open Championship. It just looked amazing. Greens and fairways tucked nicely between the steep sand dunes. Elevation changes aplenty. Runoffs made iron shots to greens treacherous. It was a perfect weather the first 3 days, rainy on Sunday, but adverse conditions did not affect Rahm's scoring. His final round 65 was one of the best of the day. American Daniel made an impression, great swing, but couldn't finish on Sunday. David Drysdale fired a 7 consecutive birdies to close out a final round 63, posted 29 on the back nine. He was the leader in the clubhouse at 17, but he was 4 hours ahead of the leaders. It ended up good enough for a T4 finish. Three players not already in the field for the Open Championship earned exemptions. Ryan Fox has had a few chances to make it to the Open Championship this season, but he finally achieved a feat with a closing 68 on Sunday. The top three players not already exempt that earned their place are New Zealand Fox, Scottish players David Drysdale, and Richard Ramsey. Mike, I got a question for you. What are your thoughts on the no call by the European rules official on John Rahm's obvious mismark?
I think they made a mistake. I mean, one thing that I've always noticed about pros is they're very meticulous about how they mark the ball. In fact, I'm the same way. It annoys me when I see people, even though I don't play in the U.S. Open, when people, they first put the marker underneath the ball and the ball moves, like, just put the marker behind the ball. Unless John Rahm's marker had some type of little, pointed device, he was saying he didn't want to put the marker down because it would have influenced, I guess, M's line to the hole. But if it was a flat item like a coin, that's not going to bother the line of M, especially if you're
in
a market.
It was a poker chip, so it was flat, yeah.
Okay, so a poker chip, that's going to be flat on those greens. They're spectacular. A poker chip's not going to cause that a depression in the blades of grass. And so when he, I was surprised you could actually mark the ball to the side, but given the fact it was an untraditional way to mark the ball, he should have known better. I know he made a comment afterwards. It was only a 1-foot putt. I agree, but that was such a big difference in the mark. It's probably the distance of the whole ball, actually. And sometimes that's the difference between making a miss from a foot. Adam Scott, I think, missed a 1-foot putt at the U.S. Open. So those putts can be missed, and he should have known better. And it's surprising that they did not levy the penalty, but at least they came to a decision quickly. So I applaud them for that. I just think the decision was the wrong one. We'll see how those kind of situations play out, but he was lucky.
Yeah, you got to feel bad for Dustin Johnson last year at the U.S. Open, Lexi Thompson at the ANA, who had similar type situations. You know, the ball hardly moved at all. Lexi probably did make a mistake. You know, it showed it on the replay, but a four-shot penalty seemed a little bit much. But anyhow, I think he should have had a two-shot penalty. I think it's clear to obvious. Brandel Chamblee called him out on Golf Channel, as he likes to do. So, hey, Mike, you're going to talk to us a little bit about the Web.com Tour that had the Lacombe Health Classic last week.
Yeah, the pros who play in the Web.com Tour gathered in the Finger Lakes area of New York State, specifically in Findlay Lake, New York. As you mentioned, they played the Lacombe Health Classic, and the winner was...
You know what that's close to? You know what that's close to, don't you, Mike?
Where you were born? I don't know.
It's not too far from Ohio. Just down the road a piece.
Everything is not far from Ohio.
Ohio is the center of the golf universe. I've been telling you people this for years.
You continue to back it up with proof. And, of course, it's worth noting, I was born in Elyria, Ohio, so I'm a golf guy. So
There you go.
again, Justin Hadley, the 2014 PGA Tour Rookie of the Year, has returned to his winning ways. This was his third victory on the Web.com Tour, and he has qualified to return to a place he feels he needs to be, which is the PGA Tour next year. Hadley won his style, shooting 23 under par, finishing with a 7 under par round of 65 on Sunday. His winning total of 265 broke the tournament scoring record by 4 shots. While it was a defining victory for Hadley, he actually only won by the closest of margins, as Bo Hostler finished 1 shot back at 266, 22 under par. Hostler closed with an 8 under par round of 64 on Sunday. Afterwards, Hadley admitted that he and his wife would be celebrating this victory with a tour of the California wine country, and I'm thinking probably in conjunction with the PGA Tour event that will be held in November in the Northern California area. So kudos and congratulations to Hadley for getting re-promoted to the PGA Tour beginning next year.
Yeah, nice to see Bo Hostler have a good week, too. He's kind of been struggling. I think he's had some injury issues. So he's a great, great player. I can't believe he's not full-time on the PGA Tour. I'm going to sum up the women's results from last week. The PGA Tour held the Thornberry Classic in Green Bay. Catherine Kirk took control of the tournament early and never let go. She fired 4 rounds of 68, 63, 65, 70 for a total 22 under par after turning the front nine and 2 under on Sunday. 3 bogeys and 3 birdies left her just a single shot clear of Ashley Buhai, who finished solo runner-up. Carlos's player, Se-young Kim, finished 1 more shot back to collect solo third place. Brooke Henderson was T28, with most of the other top names taking the week off ahead of the U.S. Women's Open this week. Another youngster to watch out for on the LPGA Tour, 19-year-old Angel Yin, a rookie, had a great event, scores of 69, 68, 67, and then 70. She finished T15. There was a reshuffle this week, which will affect tournament status going forward. Madeline Sagstrom, who we've had on the show, moved up. She's still making her claim to try and get on that European Solheim Cup team. And Holly Clyburn, our friend, also moved up. She's from England. But our good friend Beth Allen moved down. So Beth, who was the Ladies European Tour Order of Merit winner last year, kind of needs to kick it in gear to stay on the PGA Tour. She's so vested in Scotland, maybe she would be more comfortable going back to the Ladies European Tour. However, they are having some problems over there. They've canceled 6 events this year. They're looking, it's kind of bad for them. They got some sponsors pulling out. It's a tough deal over there. Speaking of the Ladies European Tour, teenager Athaya Fidicol became the youngest ever winner on the Ladies European Tour by claiming victory in the Ladies European Thailand Championship. She was 14 years, 4 months, and 19 days on Sunday. She fired rounds of 70, 71, 70, and 70 tool. The Thai schoolgirl won by 2 shots with a total of 283, 5 under par. She never stopped smiling. What were you doing at the age of 14 years and 4 months? Were you thinking about playing professional golf, Mike?
I was thinking about it, but I was actually more of a dedicated swimmer trying to be the next Mark Spitz at the time. But I was there a golfer, but not a key. So.
Did you have the Speedo and everything?
I did. I had goggles.
Oh, man.
And it was,
I'm glad I didn't have to see that.
But I was an IM guy and then a breaststroker, so I was not a butterfly freestyle like my book was.
Okay. Well, anyhow, she won. She bested her age, the age number set by Lydia Ko, back in 2012 when she won the NSW Open on the Australian Ladies Professional Golf Tour in 2012 when she was 14 years and 8 months. They just keep getting younger and younger. How do they do this stuff? Also, the Symetra Tour had they played on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday on the Donald Ross Centennial Classic at the Donald Ross course at French Lick, and I know you are familiar. We're both familiar with that golf course. Love it there. August Kim posted 7-under par for the best round of the day on the Donald Ross course to catch Aaron Lee to force a playoff. It took Lee 3 holes to dispose of Kim to collect her second Symetra Tour victory, her first this season. By making par on a third playoff hole, she pockets the second largest winner's payout on tour of $30,000. To move from 23rd to 4th on the Volvic race for the card. She now has earned almost $50,000 in 13 starts, which should pretty much guarantee her collecting one of the 10 cards that will allow her to play on the LPGA Tour next season. On Sunday, they had the Honors Division from the Legends Tour playing alongside the youngsters, Nancy Lopez, Jan Stevenson, Jane Blaylock, on and on and on. Jan Stevenson, who was inducted into Legends Hall of Fame at French Lick, bested all the other senior women. Her 3-over par 75 was better than Jane Blaylock and Sandra Palmer by 4 shots to give her a 3rd consecutive Honors Division Championship. And as you know, Mike, I got to talk to Jan there at French Lick a month or so ago. What a great honor. I have followed her for years, and that was a thrill for me. I got to talk to Greg Norman and Jan Stevenson in the same week. That was a home run.
I think it's probably the highlight of their year too. They spoke with Fred Olpe.
I'm sure they probably marked it down on the calendar. I'm sure. This is also, it continues to be a big week at French Lick because the senior LPGA is holding their first ever major championship, the senior LPGA championship on the Pete Dye course at French Lick, and that is a beast, as we both know. It's an unusual Monday-Wednesday 54-hole event on the heels of the Symetra Tour's Donald Ross Centennial. So you had 3 days of the Symetra Tour, then you've got 3 days of the Senior LPGA Championship, and then you go right in on Thursday to the U.S. Women's Open. It's a great week of women's golf. You've got it all covered this week. There are 4 World Golf Hall of Famers in the field, 81 players with 310 wins with 38 majors. 18 of the players have at least one major win. 2 Vare Trophy winners are in the field. PGA of America Vice President Susie Whaley is in the field on sponsor's exemption. Whaley, who once won a PGA sectional event in Connecticut and qualified for a PGA Tour tournament, is T60. Evidently, she didn't get on the course much. Her job at PGA of America, I think, is keeping her kind of busy. The Pete Dye course at French Lick is a handful and will give these women everything they can handle. Going into the final round tomorrow, Trish Johnson followed up her wonderful 67 on Monday with a 72 on Tuesday, but Michelle Redmond gained 3 shots for firing a second round 69 today. Johnson won here last year before it was a major and wants to be the first to hoist the big trophy this year. She will start with a 3-shot lead for the final round tomorrow. Lori Kane, Lisa Lott Norman, and Carolyn Hill are tied for 3rd, 6 shots back of Johnson. Mike, that wraps up the backspin section of the Back Nine Report. I want to talk a little bit about NWO Golf Links. It's available every month right into your email inbox. Provides our readers with the best golf news, information, and travel. Our diverse group of contributor writers, of which you are one, assure that we give varying viewpoints on a wide range of topics from around the golf world. NWO Golf Links is all digital, and it is free. Simply type in nwo.back9mediagroup.com, the number 9, nwo.back9mediagroup.com into your browser, then click on any cover to read that month's issue. The July issue will be out later this week. It features the charitable side of the Marathon Classic, the Open Championship, and Mike May's memories from the 1983 Open Championship at Royal Birkdale that goes along with our coverage of the Open, our preview of the Open Championship. Plus, we have articles about summer golf in Michigan, how to avoid stress on the golf course. Ed Travis reviews the Snell golf ball, and Rich O'Brien talks about the evolution of golf. If you call yourself a golfaholic, you have to check out NW Golf Links every month. Our next section tonight, the four caddy, is our previews. And as always, we like to give a short preview of the week's action in golf in our in this segment. We have two major championships to talk about this week, and I'm going to kick it off by previewing the U.S. Women's Open. This is being held at a place, I don't know if you're familiar with this, Mike. I've heard a little bit about it in the news. A little place called Trump Bedminster. I guess Donald Trump has something to do with that.
I believe.
We've been waiting.
Ridgewood, New Jersey, I think.
Yeah. We have been waiting a couple of years for this. I have heard the Secret Service already has the place scoped out, and the Washington Post had a whole row of reporters there. Didn't even know the Post, the keeper of the news that's fit to print for the High Moral Society, even knew golf existed. And from what I hear, the golf writers there, some of the questions that are being asked the golfers are a little bit off the wall and not really a normal golf affair. The golf may actually take a back seat to the president's possible visit, and the demonstrators still calling for Trump's head. Getting a little bit older then. Nonetheless, it is a major, and all the big names are on hand to see who will come out on top and claim the biggest purse in women's golf, $5 million. That's pretty nice. Mike, you going to tell us about the other major in golf this week?
Yes, the 15-over set will be playing for another major this weekend. It's the Constellation Senior Players Championship at the Caves Valley Golf Club, located just outside of Baltimore, Owings Mills, Maryland, to be specific. This is the fourth major of the year for the Champions Tour. Every player in the field will be looking to usurp the, not just the defending champion, but the three-time defending champion, Bernhard Langer. The senior major has been contested every year since 1983. Big names in the field include Kenny Perry, Colin Montgomery, Jay Haas, Mark O'Meara, Tom Lehman, Vijay Singh, and the two titans of Spanish golf, Miguel Angel Jimenez and Jose Maria Olazabal. My pick is for
we love MAJ. We love him.
Yeah. And he's. I looked at the pictures on the website, and he's the only guy who has jet black hair. So
it's kind of red, isn't it? Unless he must be coloring it because it's kind of reddish. I thought his hair was red.
Well, maybe that was just Photoshop or something like that. Though the Maryland faithful will be rooting for Fred Funk, who has roots in Maryland, used to be the golf coach of the University of Maryland. Go Terps! So it may be Fred Funk and Olafabel down the stretch, or possibly Langer, and you never know who else is going to be in the contention. Golfing greats who have won this event in the past include Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, Billy Casper, Fred Couples, Raymond Floyd, Dave Stockton, and Hale Irwin. The inaugural Constellation Senior Players Championship was won back in 1983 by Mr. X, the one and only Miller Barber. Remember Miller?
Yeah, absolutely.
I was once told that Miller was
The flying elbow.
Oh, the flying elbow. And he was only happy if he had a set of rental car keys in his pocket, because then he was on the road and playing another golf tournament. But as we look forward to next year, The 2018 Constellation Senior Players Championship will be held at the Exmoor Country Club in Highland Park, Illinois, just outside Chicago. But the action should be on TV, and lots of golf to follow this weekend with the U.S. women, and, of course, the men are over in Scotland, and they're also out west in Iowa. So lots of going on with tour players and the ladies and the senior men, so. Take a pick of whatever you want.
Yeah.
It's all good.
Caves Valley hosted the first ever International Crown a couple years ago for the LPGA. It looked really great. They actually hosted the U.S. Senior Open back in 2002. They've hosted some other events since then. It should be fun to watch that. The Champions Tour is in a stretch of three consecutive majors. They had the U.S. Senior Open a couple weeks ago, won by Kieran Perry. They got the senior players this week, and then in 2 weeks they got the senior British. So they got a lot of Charles Schwab Cup points are available in bunches, but someone's going to need a bunch of points to catch Bernard Lahner, who's pretty much lapped the field. Let's talk a little bit about golf in Europe, since I brought that up. The Scottish Open, the golf is getting kind of getting serious in Europe this month. We're just coming off the Irish Open, and now the Scottish is ahead of the Open Championship next week. And this is the fourth of the eight Rolex Series events that are offering $7 million purses. Four of the world's top ten are in the field. Rory McIlroy will try to shake off his disappointing missed cut in the Irish last week. Ricky Fowler, Henrik Stenson, and Adam Scott are the biggest names in the field at Dundonald. You know, if they pay them, if you pay them, Mike, they will come. $7 million gets everybody's attention. The Scottish Open will be played at Dundonald, which means Fort Donald. In 2008, Dundonald was chosen as the venue for the first stage of the European Tour qualifying school, and it continues to host this important tournament until 2011. In 2012, the course tested the seniors when it played host to the Senior Open qualifying. The prestigious Boys Amateur Championship came to Dundonald in 2014 before the course welcomed the best female players for the Aberdeen Asset Management Ladies Scottish Open in 2015 and 16. It sits on the west coast of Scotland, on the Firth of Clyde, straight across the island from straight west from Edinburgh. It's just north of Prestwick and Troon. A few Americans even ventured outside of their normal comfort zone to tee it up in the Scottish Open. Matt Kuchar, Patrick Reed, Stuart Sink, and Jason Duffner will don their kilts and give a lash. Wouldn't that be great if they really did wear kilts and tams? Could be a wee bit breezy in certain parts of the anatomy, though. This is always great to watch to get the feel of Scottish golf right before they open. You can catch it in the early mornings on Golf Channel, Mike. And you're going to talk a little bit about golf in Iowa in the cornfields. They got golf courses in the cornfields in Iowa?
They do. It's despite being the week before the Open Championship, the John Deere Classic at TPC Deer Run has another stellar field, which includes former Open champion Zach Johnson, two-time Masters champion Bubba Watson, and former PGA champion Davis Love III, who's looking to continue the momentum he had last week at Greenbrier. Eight of the top 30 players in the FedEx Cup standings are headed to Iowa for an event that will produce more birdies than bogeys. There are just six events left in the FedEx Cup playoff series for this year, so players will be taking every shot a little more seriously. One prominent player who has won this event in the past, in fact, it was his first win on tour, was Jordan Spieth, who will not be playing in this year's event. One player in the field this week is Chesson Hadley, who won last week's Web.com Tour event. Hadley was given a spot in the field due to his past champion status on the PGA Tour. If Hadley wins, he will be the third player to win on the Web.com Tour and the PGA Tour in the same season. And, Fred, I'm going to give you a chance if you can answer the two other players who have had that unique winning distinction of winning on both tours in the same season. Can you guess?
Was Jason Gore one?
Jason Gore is one. That's very good. The other one is?
Was Russell Henley one?
No, Paul Stankowski.
Paul Stankowski, there you go. Yep. That's been a long time ago now.
Yeah. Hey, Go ahead.
I'm sorry, is Steve Stricker in the field this week? I know he took some time off after, after the U.S. Open because he was tired with all the run-up to that. Is he back playing? Because he always does so well to John Deere.
That I don't know. I have to check the website, so.
Okay, no problem. Just one.
But finally, just as Greenbrier Classic means so much to West Virginia, the John Deere Classic means as much to those in the state of Iowa. I think the only other big sports event in Iowa that's bigger than the John Deere Classic is when the University of Iowa Hawkeyes football team gets on a winning streak and is invited to the Rose Bowl in Pasadena. So.
Well, they kind of like beating Iowa State, or they kind of like beating Ohio State or Nebraska, too. They kind of like that. Also, another big event that's coming to Iowa this year is the Solheim Cup. And I think that's coming to the course that you played out there in Des Moines, right?
Which is the course in Des Moines. I played it. It's just it's on the top of my head. And Wakanda Club, the Wakanda Club.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that's where the Solheim Cup's going to be.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about
Web.com.
I'm sorry, you broke up, Mike. Tell us again.
That's against slicker greens than you would imagine and more hilly than you would imagine, the Wakanda Club in Des Moines. And it's held a Champions Tour event in the past. I think the region's charity classic or whatever. But it'll be a fun venue for them.
Yeah. On the Web.com Tour, the 25 to advance the PGA Tour from the Web.com are beginning to take shape. Only seven tournaments remain to earn one of the 25 golden tickets before the Web.com Tour final series begins. This week, the Web.com moves to Utah for the Utah Championship presented by Zions Bank. Played on the Oak Ridge Country Club for the first time. Oak Ridge, which is located just 15 minutes north of Salt Lake City, has a rich history. It was established in 1956, designed by William F. Bell, has undergone recent renovations, adding and improving streams and lakes to provide better aesthetics and difficulty. Six of the top 10 players on the Web.com are in the Utah Championship this week, looking to secure that valuable PGA Tour card for next year. Mike, that wraps up the preview segment for this week. Two majors plus the inaugural senior LPGA Championship happening. It's a big week in golf. Let's move right into the par 5 news. I'll take the tee shot and just make a brief statement about Tiger Woods. You remember Tiger Woods? He used to be able to play a little bit of golf. He got a little bit of trouble, like to chase the ladies a little bit. Last week, Tiger tweeted out. You know, he doesn't talk to anybody. He just tweets or puts stuff on his website. I think he's adverse to talking to actual people. I recently completed an out-of-state private intensive program. I will continue to tackle this going forward with my doctors, family, and friends. I am so very thankful for all of the support I've received. Woods had previously announced last week that he was seeking treatment and professional help to manage his medications and the way he deals with his back pain and sleep disorder. Of course, he entered treatment after the not-too-flattering police stop on May 29th, where he was obviously zonked out of his mind. Woods was charged with driving under the influence after police in Jupiter, Florida, found him asleep at the wheel of his Mercedes-Benz. Woods, 41, has only played twice this year, missing one cut, withdrawing once, before he underwent a fourth operation on his back in April. His super agent, Mark Steenberg, said, "Tiger has been dealing with so much pain physically, and that leads to insomnia and sleep issues. This has been going on for a long time. Well, maybe he should have got some help before, you know? I understand how that thing happens, but, yeah. You know, when you got all this money like these guys have, you know, why do you put yourself in those situations? It just blows my mind. Hopefully this will be the last back operation, and he can put this stuff to end. Tiger's issues, he's back to being just Tiger freaking Woods. I don't know. It's really too bad. You know, the guy had so much going for him. Hey, Mike, we had surmised that Phil's ex-caddy, Bones McKay, may wind up in a television booth, and you're going to report that that's exactly what is happening.
Yes, Phil Mickelson's ex-caddy, Jim Bones McKay, is transitioning from being a caddy to being a broadcaster. Maybe he'll be on your show one day. He just signed a multi-year agreement to be an on-course announcer for Golf Channel and NBC, starting with the Open Championship next week at Royal Birkdale. Bones is also scheduled to be on the air for the FedEx Cup playoff events covered by NBC, as well as the President's Cup matches this fall. As of right now, there's no guarantee that Phil Mickelson will be on the U.S. President's Cup team, but Jim Bones McKay will be there with an on-the-course microphone. Meanwhile, Phil Mickelson played his first event this past weekend with his brother Tim, serving as his caddy at the Greenbrier. Tim is the former Arizona State University golf coach and now is an agent for PGA Tour pro John Rahm, as you had reported earlier, won this past week's Irish Open. As far as Phil is concerned, his final round at the Greenbrier this past Sunday was a brilliant 6-under par round of 64. So it turns out that Phil can play without Bones in the bag, and Bones is doing fine without having to carry Phil's bag for 18 holes a day. So I think they're both in good shape, and their futures are promising. And wouldn't it be interesting if in the final round of the Open, you've got Phil Mickelson with Tim in the bag, and they're like on 16th fairway, and they're not sure about the wind and the contour of the green and what club that Phil should pull. And there's Jim Bones Bacay going, eight iron.
I don't think he's allowed to do that,
and,
but that would be cool.
It would be interesting if Bacay was, Bones was standing maybe 20 feet to the right of Phil, and even though Jim's at the back, would it be inappropriate for Phil to go, hey, Bones, what do I hit here?
No, you can't do that. Yeah, that'd be great.
Don't hit that loud. So we'll see. But they're both in good shape, and they both have got day jobs for the next few weeks. So it's all good.
The Open Championship is in the news this week. Of course, it's going to be happening next week. You were just talking about it up at Royal Birkdale. And in trying to keep up with the Joneses, the other major championships, the RNA announced the Open Champ increased the total purse to $10.25 million U.S. dollars. It's going to abandon the Euro. Boy, that Euro, I think that's falling to pieces over there. Martin Slumbers, chief executive of the RNA, said, we are operating in an increasingly global marketplace and have made the decision to award the prize fund in U.S. dollars in recognition of the fact that it is the most widely adopted currency for prize money in golf. You know, these people don't want us coming around. They don't want us doing crap, but they all want to use our money. Have you ever noticed that? They really like our money. $10.25 million for the Open fits in there nicely with the Masters at $10 million, the Players and the PGA Championship at $10.5 million, but still $1.7 million below the $12 million purse at the U.S. Open. And I got to tell you, I'll be very surprised if the Masters isn't at least $11 million next year and maybe being pushed to $12 million. They cannot take being $2 million behind the U.S. Open, I guarantee it. They're not second to anybody. Lower TV ratings on tour. The networks are complaining about lower ratings for live golf telecasts, but they're screwed up. But they all screwed up 2 weeks ago when Daniel Kang won the KPMG, Kenny Perry was winning the U.S. Senior Open, and Kyle Stanley prevailed on the Quicken Loans. And all three were broadcast in the same time window on network TV. Golf Channel, Fox, and CBS all competed against each other for golf fans' viewership with the air. The next time the tours get together for a meet, they may want to bring a day planner and check some dates and times with the network. This just seems ludicrous to me. With all the airtime available on TV, why are they airing golf tournaments against each other? They didn't used to do this. I don't get it. It is just absolutely ridiculous.
Well, I think you've got the Senior Champions Tour has added extra majors. They all want to be in June, July, and August. And the European Tour is now a big deal because it gets TV time in the morning. And most of the tournaments, at this time of the year, are east of the Mississippi. So they're either going to be in the Eastern or Central time zone. And unless the LPGA wants to start in the morning and finish by early afternoon, I know the Champions Tour often gets tape delay coverage on Golf Channel, but in this case it was a Senior Open, so that needs to be held in real time, not tape delay. And of course, every PGA Tour event is a big deal, and that deserves to be in prime time as well. So we guess we just need more viewers, and so everyone can get decent ratings.
I'm sorry. Yeah, there's only so many out there, though. That's the problem. And plus, more and more people are watching on their devices. So, Mike, you're going to tell us a little bit about the fallout from working with the Prez for Phil Mickelson.
Yes, evidently Phil Mickelson is not too worried about the fallout from working with President Trump on a new golf course, according to the Associated Press. Mickelson will redesign an 18-hole golf course in Bali, Indonesia. The course will become Trump's International Golf Club. Mickelson's design team will be working with the Indonesia property developer MMC Land and the Trump Organization to redesign the Nirwana Golf Course, which overlooks the Indian Ocean. Mickelson has designed courses in Arizona, China, and in Canada. This will be the 19th international golf property for the Trump Organization. So look for Phil Mickelson to put his fingerprint, his handprint on Nirwana Golf Course. And next time you're in Bali, Indonesia, it's worth checking out.
I got a trip scheduled there. I'll have to put that in there. Yeah, I'll have to work that in.
Send me a postcard.
Yeah, I'd love to do that. If I get to that far, I'm going to Hawaii or Thailand. I'm not going to Indonesia. But, oh, man. Hey, Mike, Brandel Chamblee is at it again, taking on the USGA, and the intent of anchoring. Are Scott McCarron and Bernhard Langer breaking the rules? Is this something or nothing? Well, you know, as Brandel likes to do every so often, he likes to stir the pot once in a while. With the vagarity of the new golf rules banning the anchored stroke and putting, Bernhard Langer and Scott McCarron seem to be skirting very closely to the edge of this rule. But, evidently, stay on the right side of the USGA law by their intent not to anchor. Brandel goes into some detail in a piece he posted on Golf Channel. Anchoring, as we all know, and the USGA knows, with the exception of one word, is when the club or gripping hand or a part of the forearm is held against the body, relieving the player from making a free swing by restricting the movement of the club as if it were physically attached to the player's body, thereby providing extra support and stability for the stroke. Mike Davis has said, it's all good here, nothing to see, let's move it along. Davis said, all you have to do is hold your club away from body where you control the whole club with your hands, so long, and belly putters are legal just long as you don't anchor them. The kicker being, according to Chamblee, that the forearm is lodged against the body, thus holding the putter handle firm or attached to the upper body. He's not sure that this is legal by the strict measure of the rule. Chamblee went on to say the rule should be rewritten. Langer and McCarron both answered questions about their putting techniques and said they have both consulted with the USGA at length and never knowingly violated any of the rules of golf, both saying that they have called rules violations on themselves in the past and would not adhere to any stroke or method that did not properly comply to the rules of golf. Is the rule too vague? Did the USGA screw up in making a non-anchoring ban in the first place? Are they going to change it? Highly unlikely. That is simply not how the USGA operates, dear boy. Harump, harump. You know, let's talk about that for a minute, Mike. What are your thoughts on this anchoring thing? I mean, this has been going around. It came out last year. It became official January 1st of 2016. They announced it a couple years before that. There was a lot of teeth gnashing and a lot of argument. Our friend Ted Bishop, when he was president of the PGA, tried to negotiate to get it changed or stopped. Nothing came of that. He couldn't make any headway with USGA or the RNA. This whole thing seems like it was stupid from the outset, and a knee-jerk reaction to Ernie Els, Adam Scott, and Keegan Bradley winning major championships with anchored putters. I don't know. It just blows my mind, this whole thing. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, I think an anchored putter is difficult. So if anybody wants to do it, go at it, because I've tried it, and it's difficult. I find it that long putter is difficult to control, and if McCarron and Langer could do it as they've done in the past, all power to them. But now they are actually separating that fist from the chest, and I think what they're doing is within the rules of the game, and I don't think there's any breaking of the rules. Again, what they're doing, I think, is even more difficult because it is not anchored. It's a longer putter. It's just as long. So they've made it even more challenging to succeed. And if they can have a steady nerve and keep that putter moving smoothly, almost like a pendulum, that's great. But I would find it difficult and have never been attracted by it. And those who want to do it, go right at it, because I think it's a more difficult way than the conventional way. So I think they're fine, and I don't think there's anything going on here.
I agree with you. I think it was a stupid rule because it's not that easy to do. You're too far away from the ball, and to keep the putter head square, I don't know. Some guys get good at it, but, you know, some guys are better putters with a short putter than others. So, you know, I don't know what the big deal was. But anyhow, we got that still going on, you know, over a year and a half after – the rule was enacted. That wraps up the Par 5 News for July 11, 2017. If you're tired of watching the same old golf news on Golf Channel, ESPN, and your other golf news sources, check out Back Nine Report TV on Roku. Back Nine Report TV offers a different take on the golf news and talks about golf items other news outlets may not cover. Get Roku for your smart TV and check out Back Nine Report TV. Hey, Mike, let's move on to our practice range and our VIG section, of which you are the man tonight. So it's only fitting, with the biggest golf tournaments in the world right now being held in Europe, the Irish Open, the Scottish Open, and then the Open Championship next week. Our co-host just spent several days touring the golf courses of the Atlantic Links in the southwest of England, and he is going to tell us that you don't have to go to Scotland or Ireland to get fantastic golf in the UK. Cornwall, Devon, and Somerset is just fine with him.
It was a magical trip. I arrived in London on Friday, June 16th, around 6:30, and after I got through customs and immigration, I jumped in a rental car, traveled 2.5 hours to the southwest to the county of Somerset, which is one of the three southwestern counties in England that form that English peninsula to the southwest, and I arrived at the community of Burnham-on-Sea, B-U-R-N-H-A-M, Burnham-on-Sea, and the GPS directed me to the Burnham and Barrow Golf Course. It's been around since the late 1800s. It's a former Open Championship qualifying site. It is simply everything you would imagine in a links golf experience, and then some. I felt the wind was kind of heavy, and they said it's actually a calm day at Burnham and Barrow. I played there with a member, carried my bag. It was magical from beginning to end. The first hole was a 380-yard uphill hole to a there were no bunkers and there were no trees, and yet the wind was in our face and it played like 450. And I broke into the first hole was great. I ended up with six, and I continued on playing for the next 3-4 hours. And when you get to the fourth tee and you jump up on the tee and you look out, you see the Parrot Estuary and the Bristol Channel, which all leads to the Atlantic Ocean. You think, I have arrived. There is the sea, and here is the course, and the wind was strong, and everything you do is based on the wind and the contours. It's not target golf. You often aim for the front part of the green on these links golf courses. There's rarely trouble at the entrance to the green. All the trouble is usually the back of the green or to the sides. It allows you to bump that ball onto the hole, and the distances are not what you base your club selection on. It's the conditions, the wind, and how hard the terrain is, and whether the pin is front, middle, or back. And often you find yourself 20 paces off the front of the green, and it's the pin may be the back, and you're thinking, I'm better off hitting a Texas wedge of putter rather than trying to gauge a little pitching wedge or a little sand iron to the green. So the game is often played along the ground, and again, you watch the contours of the ground, and that's how you judge your shot. After I left Burnham and Barrow, 3 days later, I played at Trevose Golf and Country Club in Cornwall, where you can hear the sound of the surf on every single shot. And often you can see the sea in the distance, that's the Atlantic Ocean, and you feel like clicking your heels and go, I'm not in Kansas anymore. And then the next day I traveled up the coast to Westward Ho, where you find Royal North Devon. It's the oldest golf course in England. I played with one of the assistant greenkeepers, his name is Ollie, who was actually priming up to qualify for the Open 4 days later. And on this course, you find sheep and horses grazing in the rough in the pasture because the course is built on public land, which means the public are allowed to walk across the course on paths that crisscross the course everywhere, but they sort of, you know, mind the golfers, and the golfers mind them. But, yes, there's sheep in the rough, not in the fairway because the grass is too short, and sometimes you find in the middle of the backswing a little, but you just move on, and that's just the nature of the beast. The next day I played at Saunton Golf Club, which is about 20 miles away, Saunton East and Saunton West. It's a 36-hole complex, And Nick Faldo has been quoted as saying, if the Saunton Golf Club were near a bigger population with more hotels and better infrastructure, there would have been an open championship in one of those courses by now. It's that good of a course. And then finally, I wrapped up my tour a few days later. Back in Cornwall at St. Enoch, which is a course designed by James Braid, again, in the late 1800s. And Tom Watson's been there many times to play. Other great Open champions who played that course include Jim Barnes, Henry Cotton, and James Braid. You can see you're right there on the cusp of the Cannell Estuary, and many times you see the sea in the distance. Of course, I'm talking about the Atlantic Ocean and the coastal Cannell Estuary. So we actually played in a day, though there was no wind, which is very, very rare. And that wrapped up my tour through the Atlantic Links. Great golf, great weather, great accommodations, affordable fees, though I must admit there was no charge for my green fees because I was taking notes for the stories that I'm writing. But often less than 100 pounds. Accommodations there are spacious and first class. Tremendous fish and chips as well as other things, cream teas, and lots of history to check out. So as I say, if you want that true British Links golf experience, go to the Atlantic Links. It's sort of England's versions of Alabama's Robert Trent Jones Golf Trail. You can stay at Trevose. I stayed at the Saunton Sands Hotel, which is just 3 minutes away from Saunton Golf Club. When I was at the Burnham & Barrow that night, I stayed on site at a facility called the Dormy House. 8 different rooms. They all have double beds in them. So they all sort of have a place to stay nearby. You, for the most part, you're walking and pushing a trolley or a golf cart or a pull cart. A few of them do have golf carts. They call them buggies, but you almost need to have a medical condition to warrant not walking. But the reason a lot of links courses do not have golf carts is because the terrain is a little bit not smooth, and you often have side hill lies, downhill lies, and the terrain is not really conducive for the safe use of a golf cart. But they are sort of making room for them, or mainly for the Americans who don't want to walk. But when you go there, the temperature's nice, get a caddy or get a pull cart and, as they call it, a trolley, and enjoy the experience right there, you know, every step of the way.
Mike, I know you've been working on this trip for a couple of years. You've been talking about it and planning it. How did you happen to conceive this idea? You spent some time living in England growing up. You spent your high school years there, right?
Yes, I was there from 1977 to 1981. My parents actually bought a 50% stake in a small resort hotel in the coastal community of St. Ives in western Cornwall. So I played links golf at the nearby West Cornwall Golf Club. Go back a year from now, I actually had plans to visit Cornwall, to go back to St. Ives with some friends and play golf at the West Cornwall Golf Club. I reached out to some other courses in Cornwall to see if we could maybe get a tee time at these other courses with the group that I was with. And when I contacted the people at St. Enoch, their general manager, who was American at the time, contacted me and said, "We'd love to have you come visit us, but we're part of the Atlantic Links," which, as a marketing unit, has only been around for about 10 years. He put me in touch with the PR gal. Her name is Helen Hetty, who is based in London. And after I explained Helen who I was and what I can do, she put together an agenda for me that included starting at Burnham & Barrow and finishing at St. Enoch. And it was a dream come true. And the weather was brilliant, if not the best they've had in a while. No need for waterproofs or long trousers or a sweater. I was wearing shorts and polo shirts provided by Antigua and Carnoustie, and wore a hat every day. And again, I walked or carried my bag every round, and it was a delight to play. And again, if you did not know where you were and you walked off the 18th green and someone said, "Where are you?" you probably say, "Ireland, Scotland." No, you're in the southwest of England, and you're playing on some of the finest, most historic, challenging, fun, creatively designed, Mother Nature-designed golf courses you could ever imagine. And as I say, the Atlantic Links is closer to London. It's only a 2.5-hour drive to Burnham & Barrow. The weather's better. The tee times are more accessible. The golf is far less expensive. There is just as much history in the area with Stonehenge not far away and the Roman baths of Bath, or as the English call it, Bath, but that's our accent. Some of the coastal communities in Devon and Cornwall have interesting stories, like Clovelly and Devon. And the coastal communities in Cornwall all claim to have the best Cornish cream teas and the best Cornish pasties around. The accommodations and all the bed and breakfast is first class, very hospitable, very affordable. Again, by the time it takes to get from Heathrow to Burnham and Barrow, if you were taking the train or driving up to Scotland, you'd still be well on your way. And I finished my round of golf at Burnham and Barrow and had some fish and chips at a nearby restaurant and just had the time of my life that day. And I know Americans would do as well.
I think there are six courses in the Atlantic Links, and you were mentioning them. Of the six, what was your favorite? Where do you want to go back and play again for sure?
You know, I think the course that I want to go back to right away is Royal North Devon. Not only do they have, is it the oldest golf course in England, but they have an amazing set of memorabilia, pictures, old clubs, old balls that are second only to St. Andrews as far as for people who want to check out the history of the game. Tom Watson played there about 10, 15 years ago. His scorecard is on display. I think he shot 67 at Royal North Devon. And just the quaintness of having sheep and horses in the rough, and the greens were impeccable that day. I just love the blend of the present and the past at Royal North Devon. I played well that day, but gosh, I mean, I can't wait to get back and play all the courses. Again, the views of Trevose, you always hear the crash of the sounding surf. Not many golf courses that are links courses can say that. Trevose can. St. Enoch has got incredible changes in elevation, including the tallest sand bunker in Europe. It's the Himalayas bunker on the sixth hole, and I'm delighted to say that I had 3 wood off the tee, and I had a 5-iron over the top, landed just left of the green, got up and down for par. So if you can conquer the sixth at St. Enoch with the Himalayas bunker, you can play golf. Staunton East and Staunton West, there's not a house, there's no houses on site. You can't hear any motor vehicles going by. You don't hear any planes going overhead. It is you and golf, and it's one of those courses. Both of them start near the clubhouse. The ninth and tenth holes are out in the country, so when you leave the clubhouse off the first tee, you do not see civilization again until you come down the 18th fairway. So it's the most quaint, quiet experience. It's you and the course, and it's just nirvana out there. And the only thing, some of these courses, they don't have water out there, so bring a bottle of water in your bag. And they're not really hilly courses. I mean, Staunton is very flat, but it's surrounded on both sides of both fairways with sand dunes and gorse, and you want to keep it in the short grass, and it's not fun to get in the rough. As Trevina would say, you put your bag down at a British Open links course, and you find your ball, and you look back, and you lost your bag. So it's just tremendous golf, and they've done a good job of creating this tour, this trail, and they all, again, it's in Cornwall, Devon, and Somerset, and if you want great food and great golf an experience that you'll never, ever forget and want to repeat, go to the Atlantic Links. It's there for the waiting.
You can find out more information on the Atlantic Links by going to www.atlantic-links.co.uk. That's atlantic-links.co.uk. A lot of pictures there. The pictures of Trevose just blow me away with the surf rolling in there. The wind coming off the ocean. Burnham and Barrow looks fantastic. I'm very envious of you taking this trip. It just looks amazing to me, Michael.
Your postcard is on the way.
All right. That wraps up our VIG and topic for the week. So let's move on to our final putts. Mike, you're going to open us up with a couple little articles for us.
Yes, Dallas Cowboys, well, former Dallas Cowboys quarterback and part-time great golfer Tony Romo will be in action later this month in the Western Amateur. For those who have heard stories about Tony, his handicap is 0.3. It's less than one. He's a player. He's playing in the Western Amateur in Glencoe, Illinois, which starts with two rounds on August 1st and 2nd. Those are stroke play rounds. The field is cut to the low 44 and ties. Then rounds 3 and 4 are on one day. That's August 3rd. Then the field is cut to the low 16. Let's hope that Tony is still in the field. Then it's match play. Round of 16 in the quarterfinals on August 4th. That is a Friday. Then the semifinals and the finals will be on Saturday, August 5th. The world's top 10 amateur golfers will be in the field for the Western Amateurs, so Tony's got a lot of competition. He has strong roots in the state of Illinois, as he is a graduate of Eastern Illinois University. For historians, the Western Amateur was started in 1899. It is the third oldest amateur golf event in the world. The British Amateur is the oldest, established in 1885, and the U.S. Amateur started 10 years later in 1895. Past Western Amateur winners, Jack Nicklaus, Phil Mickelson, and Tiger Woods. Will it be Tony Romo as well? Time will tell. One other quick note, just going back to the Open, Ian Poulter, who was a runner-up to Padre Harrington the last time the Open Championship was held at Royal Birkdale in 2008, has qualified for this year's Open at Woburn, the last time that Ian Poulter played in a major championship was at the Masters last spring, yes, April of 2016. For the last five majors, the 41-year-old Poulter has been on the outside looking in, and now that is changing. When the Open Championship comes to Birkdale next week, Poulter will be in the field based on the fact that he successfully made it through recent qualifying process. That final hurdle was a qualifier held at his former club in England at the Woburn Golf Club, W-O-B-E-U-R-N. The last time that the Open was held at Birkdale, as I mentioned, was 2008. Poulter finished in second place, earning him the silver medal. Poulter admits that Birkdale is his favorite Open Championship venue. We will see if Poulter can take that silver medal winning effort and transform it into a gold medal winning effort and the label of Champion Golfer of the Year. Good luck to Ian Poulter, who is affectionately referred to as Poults, P-O-U-L-T-S, by his Ryder Cup teammate. So Ian has made it into the Open the hard way, and he is delighted to be in the field next Thursday at Birkdale.
Mike, I got a couple of stories just here to round out things. One of the largest sales in the history of golf, Club Corp, which operates 206 golf clubs, serves over 400,000 members, including clubs at Mission Hills and Firestone here in Ohio, sold to Apollo Global Management for, wait for it, $1.1 billion. That's billion with a B. The announcement came last week, 3 months after Club Corp's board said it would not seek a sale. Longtime CEO Eric Affle announced, however, that he would be retiring. A month later, the company added two new directors at the behest of activist investor Front Four Capital Group, LLC, which had been critical of Club Corp's management. Sounds like this just went to divorce court and everything got sold to pay everyone off. A couple really sad stories. We hate to do this, but it happens in golf, and we feel like we need to report it. A truly unfortunate incident happened during the preparation for the John Deere Classic last week. Charles Chuck Austin, 68, of Rock Island, Illinois, died of injuries suffered in an accident when the tractor he was operating lurched forward and wedged under a semi-trailer. It is our belief he was under the impression that the vehicle was in reverse when it was in fact in forward or drive. When he hit the gas, it lurched and went up under a parked semi-trailer. The victim was a 27-year volunteer. So it was, it was in his heart, and he was part of the operations group that affectionately called themselves the Grunt Group. He'd been doing it for a long time. They take on any task, any place on the property to get the tournament ready. And he took great pleasure in it. So very sad indeed, our best to his family. And then, I don't know if you saw this or not, but there's a video going around that kind of gone viral of a diver searching for old golf balls in a Florida pond that was attacked by an alligator. Latched onto his arm. He was able to get himself free and get out and seek help, but messed him up pretty good. You know, Mike, I don't know about you, but when I'm playing golf anywhere south of Tennessee, I ain't going near the water to look for a stupid golf ball. And I'm sure not going diving in a pond looking for golf balls. Last
I
year,
read that story. That's,
yeah.
And I live in Florida, and I'm aware of these gators. And they, you know, the gators have been around longer than we were, and they'll be here long after we go away. And it's their territory. You just have to be very aware. And I know this guy's been diving for balls for a number of years, but you just have to be very aware of what's going on in your surroundings. And these gators are they lie low in the water, and they're camouflage, and they intentionally don't run around with pink shirts on. They're difficult to track sometimes. You have to be very aware when you go near water that you don't step on one, because but if you don't go near them, they don't go near you. But if you happen to invade their territory and they feel that you're compromising their safety, they'll snap, and you just have to be aware. I've been in Florida since 1981, and I've seen a lot of gators on golf courses. I've seen more in South Carolina, and you just have to be very present of your surroundings when you're near a pond or a stream or any kind of body of water, because they move around all the time, especially at night, and just because they weren't here today doesn't mean they won't be there tomorrow.
Yeah. Hey, Mike, do you have any further comments before I close out the show tonight?
No, I think it's just an exciting next 2 weeks of golf with the what's going on with the senior women at French Lick. And then we've got the U.S. Women's Open this weekend and the Consolation Senior Champions Tour event. And you've got the Scottish Open, which is a big tune-up for the Open Championship next week. So if I'm not too productive, it's probably because I'm watching too much golf.
I'm with you, buddy. I'm watching. When Ireland and Scotland at the Open, I watch as much of that as I can. I love watching that stuff. Well, that's our show for tonight, Golfaholic.
I was at the Open, and so it'll seem like yesterday that I see these holes, and I saw Floyd and Palmer and Norman and Nicholas and Watson and all those guys 34 years ago, and it'll just be like a home week, so to speak.
And we have that article in the July issue of NWO Golf Links written by Mike May that's going to be coming out here just in a couple days. So look for that, nwo.back9mediagroup.com. We want to thank Mike May for co-hosting and hope you will join us next week when our European guru, Kieran Clark, will be on hand to help preview the Open Championship in Royal Birkdale. Mike, thanks again. It was a pleasure having you on the show, buddy.
As always, love to come back.
Good night, everybody. Have a great golf week, and we will be back next week talking about the Open Championship. Good night.
Hi, this is Maury Moreland Morrison here to tell you GEICO has more than just great savings. Much more. GEICO has been around for more than 75 years, back when they were using Morse code. Sorry, that's just my sense of humor. What's more, with GEICO, you get 24/7 access to licensed agents on the app, online, or over the phone, so you can talk to them at night or in the morning. So forevermore, just know that no other auto insurer has more than GEICO. More power to you. GEICO. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.